The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, February 2020, Volume 21, Number 2, and this is the first of four installments. On February's cover, Oprah sits on a tall director's chair with her name stenciled in white on the black canvas strap. She's sitting sideways, looking at us from over her right shoulder, with her arm draped across the back and her legs over the chair's arm. She's wearing a sparkling silver sequined clingy long dress with sparkling silver stilettos. Her hair is smooth and long and pulled back from her forehead and face. The slate gray rubber tiles of the soundstage floor form a grid that creates the background. This month's headline is What I Know for Sure About Love. And let's check behind the scenes. And we have another picture of Oprah sitting in this director's chair. And she's saying, now I could play Tina Turner in this dress. The headline is, Oh Snap. And she has her hands up, snapping her fingers. At this month's cover shoot, there was plenty of clapping, head bobbing, and heel tapping. What inspired our leading lady's spontaneous moves? The soundtrack to Broadway's Tina, the Tina Turner musical. Oprah had recently gone to the show accompanied by the icon herself and fallen in love. Can we play that again? She asked as the last notes of Proud Mary, sung by the production's lead, Adrian Warren, faded out. Okay, but let's try it without too much dancing, said Creative Director Adam Glassman, hoping our model would stay still long enough for photographer Reuven Affendor to get the perfect shot. In addition to the music, she was mesmerized by her sky-high Roger Vivier Hills. Gorgeous, she said. They're like glimmery, shimmery boats. Then she got back to Rolling on the River. And across the bottom of the page, there are ways for us to get her sparkly look. The headline is Shining Examples. Add a little metallic sparkle to your wardrobe to beat the winter blues. A dynamite sequin dress or blingy separates bring the party. And we have a dress, a top, and some trousers here. From Badgley Mishka for $550 at Saks. We have a silver slinky form fitting dress with sleeves that have all this fullness that starts up at the shoulder and is held down at the cuff, the wrist. And these are known as bishop sleeves. They're very full and very broad at the bottom. The jewel neckline on this dress has an elongated keyhole that flirts with the top of the breast. Next, we have a gold sequin wrap top from Retrofit, and it's $540, and you can go to netaporter.com to find it. This gold sequined wrap top with long balloon sleeves that are gathered at the shoulder and at the wrist, but there's just a skinny little piece of elastic so that they balloon down over the hem, as opposed to the first dress where they have about 3-inch cuffs on them. And it has a chiffon and sequined tie that drapes down low below the sort of curved hem of this wrap top. And then we have some sequined, these are kind of gunmetal gray and black sequined trousers, a skinny little band, and kind of a straight leg, so you get a little bit of volume at the calf and the ankle. And those are from Le Superbe, and they're $525 at Saks.com. One more thing to finish off this look, the lipstick. For Oprah's lip look, start with a cocoa lipstick, then add sheen with a matching or clear gloss. This is Gucci Rouge Olivier Satin Lipstick in number 106, Tacy Hazel, $42 at Sephora.com. And now we have Here We Go from Oprah. Life can turn on a dime. Your oven breaks down, you accidentally knock on the wrong door, you make a left instead of a right. And next thing you know, you've met the person who will open your world in ways you never dreamed possible. What could be more fitting for a month that celebrates love than a collection of crazy, funny, magical, heartbreaking, hope-making stories of how people manage to find each other? In my case, Stedman came along when a soulmate was the last thing on my mind, but all these years later, here we are. And if you're still trying to figure out what to give the man, woman, or toddler you adore, we have 13 suggestions that range from delicious to delightful on the O-list. Here's a question. Are you now, have you ever been, or are you soon planning to be between the ages of 40 and, oh, say, mid-50s? It seems that a whole lot of women in that demographic are berating themselves for not having achieved what they think they should have. Before you fall into the expectation gap, Ada Calhoun has a few guilt-releasing thoughts you might be interested to hear. So, we've met, we've shopped, we've set ourselves free from the tyranny of unrealized dreams. What's left but to pop some corn, sit back, and read on? Enjoy. And of all the topics that are going to be covered in the February issue, we have a page that is your take on topics we're covering this month in the upper left-hand corner. And again, most of the pictures in the Oprah magazine of items such as jewelry, clothes, etc., are generally against a white background with a little bit of shadow. So we've got this absolutely extravagant gold, sapphire, and diamond cocktail ring, and the diamonds are on standing up on little prongs all by themselves, and there must be two dozen of them. And then there's a tear-shaped sapphire in the middle. So the question is, what's your signature ring style? 29% say big and blingy. And then the other picture is a delicate little silver band with a small ruby set in a silver bezel right on top. And 71% say that their style is personal and petite. The next question, what's your go-to gym workout? And we see a woman here in a tank top, and she's lifting some red dumbbells. 49% say cardio all the way. 51% say, I love to pump iron. The next question, and we see a gloved hand with a dentist tool in it. Does the word dentist fill you with fear? 40% say, if you mean terror, absolutely. 60% say, love keeping my pearly whites pearly white. The next picture is of a voting booth with a red curtain pulled, and we're looking at the back of a woman's, well, calves and black high-heeled shoes. The question, do you normally vote in the presidential primaries? 74% say always, and 26% said, nope, but I will this year. And our final question, we have a picture of the face of a golden retriever. And perched on top is this adorable little gray tabby kitten. And the question is, are you a dog person or a cat person? 80% say smooches for pooches. 20% say cats rule, dogs drool. And in January, they introduced a new section to the magazine, and it's called 2020 Visionaries. To celebrate 20 years of O, each month we're spotlighting remarkable people who could change the way we look at the world. And the first picture here, we have an African-American woman standing in some kind of form-fitting black slacks and some black high heels, and she's wearing a white blazer. Excuse me, a white double-breasted blazer, and it has black trim on the notched collar, the lapel, across the hem of the blazer itself, and the patch pockets. And this is, one more thing. She has really fine braids that are nestled in a sort of bun on the top of her head, and they kind of cascade down the left side of her face to sort of form some bangs. And the writer of wrongs is Holly Mitchell. As the author of a groundbreaking bill that aims to end school and workplace discrimination against natural hairstyles, the California state senator is giving new power and pride to people of color. In July 2016, an ex-manager at a posh Manhattan hair salon filed a complaint with New York City's Human Rights Commission, alleging that while working at the salon, he'd been asked to implement a hair policy that seemed aimed at black employees. Three additional complaints were filed in the next 2 years against the same employer, including one in which a stylist and a co-owner were said to have disparaged black workers' dreadlocks and box braids as not befitting the salon's luxe vibe. The ensuing investigation led to groundbreaking legal guidelines banning grooming policies that target hairstyles associated with black people. But as pioneering as these guidelines were, they applied only to New York City. Enter California State Senator Holly Mitchell, who in January 2019 introduced the Crown Act, creating a respectful and open workplace for natural hair, which was signed into law last summer. It took effect January 1st, the first state law to ban discrimination based on natural hair or styles like locks, braids, and twists in workplaces and public schools. For years, Mitchell had watched in frustration as hair-based discrimination went unpunished because no statutes existed on which to build precedent. Meanwhile, people were losing jobs or facing other consequences for refusing to conform to Eurocentric definitions of what was appropriate. An Alabama woman reported that a job offer was rescinded after she resisted cutting her locks, which a manager feared would, quote, get messy, end quote. A sixth grader was suspended for wearing braided extensions. A high school wrestler was forced to cut his dreads in order to be allowed to compete in a match. The results of a 2019 survey by the beauty brand Dove underscored that such anecdotal complaints were part of a larger pattern and confirmed that legions of black women have been penalized for or made uncomfortable about their hair. That employers tend to see traditional black hairstyles as less professional, and that black women are far more likely to be subject to formal grooming policies at work. Dove, under the umbrella of the Crown Coalition, teamed up with Mitchell to co-sponsor the Crown Act. When I spoke with her, Mitchell recalled that being able to wear braids through high school without backlash contributed to her self-confidence and future success. She asks, quote, "If young girls aren't given the positive message that they are perfect just the way they are, how can they grow up to be strong, secure women?" End of quote. For those who, like me, have been on the receiving end of hair-based prejudice, the significance of the Crown Act can't be overstated. I was in my second year of law school interviewing for a summer associate position when, out of the blue, a partner in the firm assured me that if I chose to work there, they wouldn't hold the way I wore my hair in dreadlocks against me. I went with a different firm. There, it turned out, I was the only black woman, and I frequently felt isolated. It seemed to me that my white peers got more support, and I couldn't help wondering whether that stemmed from an uneasiness about the way I presented myself. But I didn't then have the means of processing or the language to explain why I felt belittled. The Crown Act provides that language. It establishes an understanding that even when there isn't a direct threat to a student or an employee, the tacit or expressed message that physical qualities associated with blackness aren't suitable for polished settings has penetrated our cultural standards and our psyches. The Crown Act forces us to reckon with Eurocentric bias and the assumption of black inferiority, and it offers healing for black people who, in modifying themselves, even subconsciously, have internalized less than-ism. The way we wear our hair should be our choice. In protecting that choice by law, Senator Mitchell has ushered in a new era of hope. And we have a picture. Mitchell watches as Governor Gavin Newsom signs the Crown Act into California law July 3, 2019. And then there's a middle school picture of Mitchell, who was born and raised in Los Angeles. And she's wearing a brown and russet plaid shirt with a sort of teddy bear brown vest over the top of it. And her hair appears to have been straightened, and it's full and short and very tapered. So let's look at the O quiz, a round of 20 questions with Mitchell. So the first one, what's your guilty pleasure? She says napping on a beach while waves crash within earshot. Second question, if you could send a note to yourself in 2030, what would it say? Her reply, your focused work on equity, injustice, and access to affordable housing, health services, fair pay, and education paid off. The Crown Act was just the beginning in an effort to redefine beauty for all. The young women who now understand that their natural hair and how they choose to wear it will not limit their trajectory have blossomed into confident leaders. Your determination to stay true to yourself as an unapologetically black woman leader was definitely the right choice. You badass, you. Third question, what's the one thing in life you're so happy you did? She says, choosing to parent. As an adoptive parent, I honor the courage it took for my son's birth mother to trust me. I've discovered over the past 19 years that parenthood is the ultimate act of selflessness. Number four, who's the one person who changed your life? She says, my son. The fifth question, what makes you cry? Her answer, the loss of family, blood and otherwise, who loved me unconditionally and served as my advisors and truth tellers. Navigating life without their physical presence has been daunting. The sixth question, what gives you hope? She says, the next generation of leaders. Serving as legislator in residence at Mount St. Mary's University in Los Angeles affords me the opportunity to spend time with young women and hear them, learn from them, and believe in them. Question number seven, what's the best mistake you ever made? She says, after a chemical mishap in a salon 25 years ago, I had to cut off my hair, all of it. I cried the whole way home. I contemplated buying a wig until my mother told me that if I hid, I'd never take it off. That's when I realized my mental attitude and sense of self are more important than my appearance. When I showed up at work, everyone thought I'd cut it on purpose and tell me how great I looked. The eighth question, what keeps you up at night? She says, worry. Were the decisions I made today the correct ones? If not, how do I set things right? The ninth question, what's your secret talent? She says, I'm a dancing machine. The tenth question, what's one thing you were wrong about? She says, that I had plenty of time. Time to save for retirement, time to find and nurture true love, time with my parents, time to re-lose that last 20 pounds. Alas, life really does go by fast. The 11th question, what movie could you watch on an endless loop? And she says, Dr. Zhivago. The soundtrack, his eyes, the snow, what a love story. Number 12, what's your worst habit? She says, not exercising or flossing daily. I do love my water pick, though. Question 13, cats or dogs? She says, dogs. Question 14, when is the last time you felt awe? She said, when I stood under the great oak, a thousand-year-old tree known as Huasl, on the ground of the Pechanga Band of Luiseno Indians in California's Temecula Valley. The 15th question, if you could choose any magical power, what would it be? Her answer is time travel. The 16th question, what is your most prized possession? She says, my collection of 100-year-old photos of my maternal great-great-grandparents and paternal great-grandmother. They connect me to my roots and give me a sense of belonging. The 17th question, what places or adventures are still on your bucket list? And she says, Bora Bora, with those thatched roof huts on the water, a meeting in the Oval Office, an extended stay on the continent. The 18th question, what ignites your sense of injustice? She says, all the isms, racism, classism, sexism. The 19th question, what's the greatest gift we can give ourselves? And she says, kindness. And finally, the 20th question, what's the greatest gift we can give one another? And she says, forgiveness. Let's take a look now at the reading room and 10 titles to pick up now. And the first book is Oligarchy by Scarlett Thomas. In this delicious gothic set in a British boarding school, the daughter of a massively rich Russian finds herself menaced equally by Instagram, an anorexic epidemic, and a spectral ancestor whose haunting portraits seem to watch her every move. The second title, Becoming a Man, by P. Carl. Elegiac and Celebratory, this memoir, charts how the author's gender transition upended both his marriage and his notions of masculinity. Quote, I am a work in progress, always doubling as different selves in different spaces, still learning how to navigate the multiple truths this body inhabits. End of quote. The third title to pick up now, Uncanny Valley by Anna Weiner. A New Yorker writer chronicles the 4 years she spent working in San Francisco's startup culture during, quote, the dawn of the era of the unicorns, end of quote, in this moving and portentous expose of a tech bro utopia that wasn't. The fourth title, Fight of the Century, edited by Michael Chabon and Eilert Waldman. From a constellation of literary heavyweights, among them Lauren Groff, Michael Cunningham, and Justman Ward, comes a stellar anthology of original essays celebrating the landmark ACLU cases that broadened our rights via duels with the nation's highest court. The fifth title is The Third Rainbow Girl by Emma Copley Eisenberg. 4 decades ago, 2 young women were murdered in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, a case that languished until an intrepid freelance reporter picked up the trail. Eisenberg chronicles how the crime has resounded through the years, stoking ever-building suspicion, pitting neighbor against neighbor. The sixth title is Cleanness by Garth Greenwell. Greenwell's breathtaking novel in stories follows an American teacher roaming the recesses of Bulgaria's gay underground in search of, quote, the key to the latch of the self, end of quote. The seventh title is Dear Edward by Anne Napolitano. In Napolitano's poignant third novel, a radiant tale of trauma leavened by humor and hope, the adolescent sole survivor of a plane crash grapples with the loss of his family while becoming the focal point of a nation's mourning. The eighth title to pick up now is Kingdom Tide by Rye Curtis. Yet more unfriendly skies, a 72-year-old small-town Texan whose prop plane has gone down in the wilds of Montana must hike a treacherous mountain range to safety despite severe injuries and waves of grief, tracked by a park ranger whose canteen is always filled with Merlot. Gritty and intense. The ninth title, The Tenant, by Katrine Ingeborg. In this gripping addition to the Scandinavian crime fiction pantheon, 2 detectives from the Copenhagen police force investigate the brutal killing of a woman whose landlady's secrets straddle a fragile line between real and imagined. And the tenth title to pick up now, Between Two Fires, by Joshua Yaffa. Through interviews with entrepreneurs, humanitarians, and plain folk, a journalist pulls back the Iron Curtain to expose the wiliness and willingness to compromise that it takes to navigate Putin's Russia, and how the promise of perestroika has given way to cynicism. And now we'll head to the specials feature section of the February 2020 edition. And the first page is a picture of one of those enamel-clad cast iron Dutch ovens. It's red and it's full of yellow popcorn and it's against a white background. And the lid is kind of suspended on it as if it's been popped up by the popcorn. The lid is that Oprah O. It's a brighter red around the rim and a darker red in the middle with a little stainless steel knob. February 2020, kernel of truth. Chance meetings can bring us into contact with people who will change the course of our lives for the better. And we've got the awe and awe-inspiring stories to prove it. Let's kick off a sure-to-be tumultuous, action-packed political year the right way by getting informed, getting active, and getting vocal. And seven snappy dressers may have you switching up your style strategy. Let's start this section with Join the Party, nine reasons to get excited and involved this election season. Whether you believe 2020 is the most consequential election of our lifetime, or since the Civil War, or ever, as people of all political persuasions have proclaimed, showing up to the polls this fall feels non-negotiable. But November 3rd isn't the only day our voices matter. Lately, millions of us have been summoned to political action as never before. That surge has energized and re-engaged us, made us view our democracy in a brand new light, inspired soul-stirring art and game-changing nonprofits, and even compelled our kids to take a stand, too. Exercising our rights is no longer a November thing, it's an all-year-long thing. Are you in? And here's reason number one, because you can make real change. In 2016, the total turnout in presidential primary elections was just 29% of eligible voters, according to the nonpartisan group Fair Vote. While that dismal number can be partially attributed to voter ID laws that reduce participation, it's also true that many Americans just don't approach primaries with the same fire in their belly as they do a general election. But overlooking this first leg of the electoral process is a huge missed opportunity with potentially dire consequences down the road. In our hyper-polarized times, your choice in the general election is stark. Right or left, the party line. But in the primaries, you have the chance to choose the best possible candidate from a wide selection and get an early idea of who can withstand political pressures. After all, it was competitive primaries that gave us transformative figures like Shirley Chisholm, John McCain, and Ayanna Pressley. Politicians who then entered Washington battle-tested and ready to fight. The primaries are also your chance to participate in an adult conversation about the nuances of policy, your priorities as a voter, and the direction you believe your party and the country should be headed. A discussion about solutions rather than a shouting match between diametrically opposed candidates. It's true that the more competitive the primary, the louder the noise, but the answer isn't to cover your ears, it's to make your voice heard early and often. Reason number two, because you can be in the driver's seat. As real estate agents and house hunters know, location is everything. And when it comes to the location of polling places, distance or obstacles like a disability or no access to a car can mean the difference between voting and not voting. In a 2016 survey, 29% of registered voters under age 30 cited a lack of transportation as a reason for not casting a ballot. That year, data strategist Saskia Otto, whose godmother often struggled to get to the polls in her power chair, created the free rideshare service Carpool Vote. If you're able to offer a lift, call them at 804-424-5335. You'll be matched with a voter who's requested a pickup within the distance you've selected. You'll be notified if your passenger needs to bring a service animal or requires assistance getting in and out of the vehicle, and you'll be on the road to shaping our future. And here's a sidebar, rebel with a cause. Perman Hardy isn't employed by Alabama Votes, doesn't work for the Alabama Secretary of State, and doesn't campaign for any candidates. But if you live in Lowndes County, Alabama, the 61-year-old former sharecropper may have helped you register to vote, or even given you a lift to the polls in her green Chevy Tahoe. For 30 years, Hardy has made it her mission to ensure that in every race, general or primary, national or local, citizens in her county make their votes count. Hardy grew up less than 40 miles from Selma's Edmund Pettus Bridge and was 7 years old when the Revolutionary March that spurred passage of the Voting Rights Act took place there in 1965. She says, quote, "I got a chance to see history." It made me interested in figuring out what I could use my voice to do. End of quote. Shortly after she turned 18 in 1976, two elderly women knocked on Hardy's door with voter registration paperwork, stressing the importance of fulfilling one's civic duty. At the time, black voter suppression was rampant in Alabama, and Hardy decided she'd try to combat it by motivating others to participate, just as the women had encouraged her. She says, quote, "I make sure my community knows that people lost their lives so we could have the right to vote," end quote. Hardy keeps local high schools stocked with registration forms and stops by often to check that all of-age students are on the rolls. She ferries completed forms to Alabama Votes herself. During the 2017 special U.S. Senate election between Doug Jones and Roy C. Moore, she spent over 10 hours driving voters to the polls. Having retired from her work as a home health nurse, Hardy finds that logging miles and taking names is a job in and of itself. The hardest part? Quote, "Well, I've just gotten older, and I get weary," end of quote, she says with a laugh. She goes on to say, quote, "But the race is not given to the swift. It's given to the one who endures until the end," end of quote. And here's the third reason to get involved in the primaries, because you can bone up on the issues while sipping Chardonnay with friends. Here's a novel idea. You and your gal pals already have a regularly scheduled get-together, complete with wine, cheese, and open minds, where you discuss your latest good read. This year, because the politics reflected on ballots and debate stages feel advanced algebra baffling, why not set aside the fiction bestseller and instead do a deep dive into a thorny topic crucial to our democracy? Wasn't math at least a little more fun when you had study buddies to run the numbers with? For inspiration, you might take a page from the Desert Progressives, an Arizona group that began as a book club in 1994. After the 2016 election, they armed themselves with the Indivisible Guide, a viral Google Doc created by former congressional staffers Ezra Levin and Leah Greenberg, that contains advice for local activism, and transformed themselves into an informed political powerhouse. Even if you don't go as far as the Progressives' co-founder, retired librarian and English teacher Judy Schweibert, who's now running for office, you can give yourself a confident grip on the issues that matter. To get started, pick a topic you'd like to be better versed in. Healthcare, voting rights, immigration, the economy, the list goes on, and a snack that pairs well. For a few ideas, check out the sidebar. By the time November 3rd rolls around, you might just be a well-fed wonk. So here is the sidebar, food and drink for thought. A recent Gallup poll showed that the issues most important to American voters are healthcare, the economy, and immigration. If your group plans to deconstruct these complex topics, here are some literary jumping-off points. Under healthcare, America's Bitter Pill by Stephen Brill. This comprehensive look at the political machinations behind the passage of the Affordable Care Act is an info-packed intro to our country's Byzantine healthcare system. It pairs well with healthy fare like kombucha cocktails and crudités with organic sour cream dip. The Economy. The Economist's Hour by Benjamin Applebaum. It reveals the hidden figures who, after World War II, helped shape America's fiscal policies and demystifies what the economy even is. Pairs well with a beluga caviar for the one percenters and saltines for the rest of us. And finally, immigration. 97 Orchard by Jane Ziegelman. This big-hearted work of socio-historical gastronomy chronicles the lives and diets of five immigrant families inhabiting the same Manhattan apartment building. It pairs well with German beer, Irish cheddar, Spanish olives, Italian bread, and Lebanese hummus. And we have a quote here from Amy Allison, founder of She the People, an organization that promotes the voices of women of color in politics. Women of color know what it's like to be on the receiving end of policies and practices that harm us and our communities. But we also know what it's like to believe deeply in democracy. In 2012, black women had the highest voter turnout of any race and gender. Our presence is finally being acknowledged, and the primaries are where we figure out which candidates can carry the issues that matter to us and to everyone. Personally, I want a candidate who understands black maternal health. I want a candidate who understands how to address the white supremacist violence we've been seeing in places like El Paso. I want a candidate who understands how to address the housing crisis in my hometown, Oakland. The primaries are the testing ground for that. And if we elevate the turnout in this next year, we change the future of the country. Reason number four, because you don't have to be a super PAC to move the needle. The only people who can make an impact with political donations are DC fat cats with access to deep-pocketed corporations. Right? Wrong. If you combine your funds with those of other passionate citizens, seemingly minor political donations can turn into a major force. And money talks even louder at the local level, where systemic change really starts. Quote, 85% of school board races are run for $5,000 or less, end of quote, says Amanda Littman, co-founder of Run for Something. A few tips for starting your own fundraising drive, and there are four of them. Pick a target dollar amount. Visit FEC.com to learn the Federal Election Commission regulations on donations. Make a list of potential donors, how much you plan to ask for, and how you'll ask. Email, in person, over the phone. Amplify your ask via social media or email so your community feels invested in helping you reach your goal. And the third one, explain why your candidate matters to you. A personalized, heartfelt appeal is more compelling. And finally, tell your donors what you intend to do with the funds and when and how they'll be distributed. Then send the dollars and cents you've collected to the candidate who makes sense for our country's or your town's future. And now, reason number five, because you can get new voters on the rolls without leaving the dinner table. Tormented by people who, for whatever reason, aren't registered to vote, why not hold your own registration drive? For best results, choose an area with plenty of foot traffic, like a sporting event, a farmer's market, or even a busy bar. Of course, you'll want to get permission first to set up a table. Practice your pitch, gather a few friends for backup, and have some well-charged internet-connected devices on hand to help people sign up. For more tips, get a handy and free toolkit at rockthevote.org, which also offers sample scripts in case you get tongue-tied. If you have an aversion to clipboards and chatting up total strangers, you can accomplish practically the same thing just by passing around your phone at a dinner party. Head to vote.gov to enter your location. And if your state is one of the 37, plus the District of Columbia, that has online registration, it'll direct you from there. A perfect palate cleanser. Reason number six, because this is the moment for a powerful new women's movement. Here are a couple of fun facts and one that's not so fun. Women have accounted for the majority of voters in every national election since 1964. They're increasingly powerful donors. In 2018, they gave over $100 million more to congressional campaigns than they had in 2016. Yet, despite some gains, the U.S. ranks 77th globally in women's representation in government, behind even China, Afghanistan, and Iraq. That's one reason former Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards, Black Lives Matter co-founder Elisa Garza, and National Domestic Workers Alliance Executive Director Ajin Poo teamed up last year to launch Supermajority, the women's advocacy group working to mobilize at least 2 million women into political action ahead of Election Day. Garza says, quote, right now women are leading the charge in some of the major movements changing the landscape of this country, from climate change to reproductive justice to hashtag Me Too. So 2 million more women activated, motivated, organized, and voting will change what's happening in Washington, in state legislatures, and in city halls nationwide, end of quote. Sign up to be connected to local resources in your area at supermajority.com. And here's another rebel with a cause. When it comes to holding politicians accountable, young voters are on the job. 18 to 29-year-olds were the only age group that went to the polls in 2016 in greater numbers than in 2012. They're also spearheading political movements and urging lawmakers to respond. In 2017, teens and 20-somethings of the Sunrise Movement, a group dedicated to making climate change awareness a national priority, drafted the Green New Deal. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez co-sponsored the bill in 2019 along with 95 others in the House, and it has a legitimate chance of being signed into law by 2021. In the meantime, Sunrise is ranking 2020 Democratic presidential candidates on their commitment to fight for the Green New Deal. You can keep tabs at scorecard.sunrisemovement.org. Young people have also led the way in addressing gun violence. Following the 2018 massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, student survivors organized March for Our Lives. 5 weeks after the attack, their first rally in Washington, D.C., drew an estimated 800,000 participants, according to organizers, and inspired more than 700 sister rallies across the world. Legislators went on to pass 65 gun control measures, more than in the previous 6 years combined. Then there are groups like United We Dream, led by young immigrants, which has helped protect more than 800,000 from being deported. And Black Lives Matter, founded by under 35 activists to fight for racial justice. Young people are advocating for health care and education reform and transparency in government, but they can't do it alone. The more that all Americans demand action on issues that matter, the less politicians can dodge the public will, meaning there's never been a better time to be young at heart. Reason number 7, because you might get a free slice. You slip away from your office at lunchtime to cast your ballot, but the line at your polling site is out the door and down the block. An hour later, you're hangry and thinking of giving up. Don't. Instead of bailing on your civic duty, you can contact Pizza to the Polls, a nonprofit that sends free hot pies to crowded voting stations. The nonpartisan organization started providing tasty reinforcements in the days before the November 2016 election, when three co-workers in Oregon grew alarmed by reports of 3- and 4-hour waits at early voting sites in other states. In Cincinnati, one line stretched half a mile. Quote, "We knew we couldn't make the process move faster, but we could help keep people from leaving," end of quote, says co-founder Katie Harlow, who goes on to say, quote, "We thought, what's something most people really like? Free food," end of quote. A few hours later, the trio had a name, a Twitter handle, a website, and a plan. To report long lines, voters submit a social media post documenting the crowd size to the nonprofit's website. Pizza to the Polls then uses money donated by fellow citizens to have pies delivered from a local pizzeria. To date, the group has raised over $425,000 in dough and sent more than 13,000 pepperoni, cheese, veggie, barbecue, and Hawaiian pizzas to voting sites in 24 states, from New York to California, and to events like protests, rallies, and teach-outs. True, fewer people tend to turn out for primaries and for general elections. But with new voter ID laws, hello North Carolina, and voting machines, Georgia and Pennsylvania, we're looking at you, comes the potential for glitch-related lines. If hiccups, headaches, and hunger pangs arise, Pizza to the Polls will be ready to fuel democracy, one slice at a time. And just as a note to listeners, probably at the time of the printing, North Carolina's voter ID laws were supposed to go in effect for the primary. Most of us voters have probably received cards telling us that they have not gone into effect for this year. So please don't let the information here in this article keep any of you from voting. And now, reason number 8, because you can turn participation into a celebration. The nonprofit Civic Nation wants to make doing your part feel less like a chore. To that end, its initiative, hashtag Vote Together, encourages people to host voting parties or other gatherings at or near polling locations. Visit VoteTogetherUSA.org to download a party pack, which includes an event planning guide and printable flyers, posters, photo props, and other goodies. The program, piloted in 2016, found that celebrations can increase turnout at the polls by up to 4 percentage points at precincts near where they're held. And mark your calendar. Schedule-wise, the presidential primaries or caucuses vary wildly from state to state. In some, they arrive before Valentine's Day. In others, they're squarely in bathing suit season. Let this chart be a guide to your date with voting destiny. And it shows here that North Carolina's primary is on March 3rd. So you know, as of press time, the Republican Party had canceled its 2020 primary or caucus in Alaska, Arizona, Hawaii, Kansas, Nevada, South Carolina, and Virginia. All delegates are expected to be allocated to President Trump. And finally, reason number 9 to get involved, because homework helpers are standing by. Have strong opinions on the federal candidates but feel a little fuzzy on those local judges down ballot? Head to ballotready.org and enter your address. Launched in 2015, the site shows what you'll see in the voting booth. You can prep yourself with details on local candidates, including their biography, stance on key issues, alma mater, and endorsements. Then bring your smartphone into the box, if that's legal in your state or county, as a civic engagement cheat sheet. Now we've wrapped up our 9 reasons to get involved in the primaries this year, and let's listen to a few recipes as we wind down this first hour for February. And the recipes are Pop Sensations. It's your trusty crunchy sidekick for Super Bowl cheering, Oscars rooting, and binge watching. But it's time to think outside the bowl. Popcorn's light and so satisfying texture also lends itself to savory appetizers, salty sweet desserts, and creative topping combinations that hit all the right flavor notes. In other words, these innovative recipes might be your new fan favorites. And what we see here is popcorn adorned with chocolate drizzled kernels and sandwich cookie chunks. This decadent dessert is dressed in Sunday's finest. So we have scoops of ice cream with sprinkled with popcorn that looks like it's been dipped in something really delicious, and chocolate syrup poured over it. And here's the recipe for Oreo popcorn sundaes, and this makes 4 servings with a total time of 30 minutes. It takes 6 cups of air-popped popcorn from about 3 tablespoons of kernels, 3 ounces white chocolate chopped, 1 tablespoon of coconut oil, 10 Oreo cookies crushed, about 1 cup, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 3 cups of ice cream, any flavor, chocolate sauce, and whipped cream for serving. Line a rimmed baking sheet with wax or parchment paper and place popcorn in a large bowl. Melt chocolate and coconut oil in microwave, stirring every 20 seconds until smooth. Drizzle over popcorn and toss to coat. Fold in cookie crumbs and salt. Spread mixture onto prepared baking sheet and let set about 20 minutes. Scoop ice cream into separate bowls and top with popcorn, chocolate sauce, and whipped cream if desired. The next recipe is for salted caramel popcorn bars. And they've got these bars lined up on the page, and they've been cut in at angles. Think of these gooey, chewy squares as the grown-up version of Rice Krispies treats. And here are the ingredients. 12 cups air-popped popcorn from about 6 tablespoons of kernels. 1 cup of sugar, 1 tablespoon of light corn syrup, 1/2 cup of heavy cream. 6 tablespoons unsalted butter divided, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda. 10 ounces mini marshmallows, 1 cup bittersweet chocolate chips or chunks, and flaked sea salt. Preheat oven to 250 degrees. Line a rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper. Place popcorn in a large bowl. In a small saucepan with a candy thermometer attached, stir together the sugar, 1/4 cup of water, and the corn syrup. With a pastry brush dipped in water, brush any sugar crystals off the side of the pan and discard them. Bring to a boil over medium-high heat without stirring, about 3 minutes. Boil until 340 degrees. Color should be dark amber. 8 to 10 minutes. Working quickly, remove pan from heat and add heavy cream and 2 tablespoons of butter, stirring until smooth. Stir in vanilla and salt. Transfer 3/4 cups to a measuring cup, reserving 1/4 cup, and stir in baking soda. Pour mixture over popcorn and fold to coat, then spread onto the prepared sheet. Bake, stirring halfway through for 20 minutes and let cool. And finally, lightly coat a 9x13 metal pan with cooking spray, line with parchment, leaving overhang on the 2 long sides. Spray the parchment. In a large pot over medium heat, melt remaining 4 tablespoons of butter. Add marshmallows and cook, stirring until they begin to lose their shape, about 1 minute. Add 1/4 cup remaining caramel and cook, stirring until smooth. Add popcorn and fold to coat completely. Let cool for 3 minutes, then fold in chocolate. Transfer mixture to prepared pan. Sprinkle with sea salt and let cool. Use overhangs to transfer to a cutting board and cut into 9 bars. And now, here's a recipe for popcorn chicken bites. And they're crunchy pieces of chicken with something's been drizzled on them. It looks really yummy, and they're on skewers. Here are the ingredients. 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 2 large eggs beaten, 4 cups air-popped popcorn from about 2 tablespoons of kernels, and 1 tablespoon of cornstarch. 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1/2 pound of boneless chicken breasts cut into 1-inch pieces, dipping sauce such as buffalo or ranch for serving. Preheat oven to 425 degrees. Coat a small rimmed baking sheet with oil. Place eggs in a shallow bowl. In a food processor, pulse popcorn, cornstarch, and salt to form fine crumbs. Transfer to a shallow bowl. Dip chicken pieces in egg, letting excess drip off. Then dip in popcorn mixture to coat, pressing gently to help it stick. Transfer to prepared sheet and bake until just cooked through. 9 to 12 minutes. Serve hot with dipping sauce. And a note here, coating your chicken with pulverized popcorn instead of breadcrumbs adds a delightfully airy texture and gives you a gluten-free appetizer option. And now they show 4 bowls of popcorn with different toppings. Mix it up. If you prefer your popcorn straight from the bowl, tossing 4 cups with these fancy additions will elevate any everyday kernel. The first one, super spiced. This gives your popcorn a lovely yellow hue and a subtly bittersweet bite. Add to your popcorn 1 teaspoon of ground turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of ground coriander, and 1/4 teaspoon of cinnamon. Now, here's another one, peanut choco banana. The next best thing to spoonfuls of regular peanut butter in your bowl. They've mixed popped popcorn with 3/4 cup mini pretzels, 3/4 cup banana chips, 1/4 cup of M&Ms, and 1 tablespoon of powdered peanut butter. And here's a note about popping popcorn. You're golden. You don't need a special contraption to pop your own corn. In a 6-quart pot with a tight-fitting lid over medium heat, heat 3 tablespoons of coconut or olive oil. Add kernels and replace lid. Shake pot every 20 seconds or so until popping starts, then shake every 5 seconds until 3 seconds pass between pops. Immediately remove from stove, take off lid, and sprinkle with salt. For air-popped kernels, just skip the oil. And now, for a really fancy popcorn, truffle herb. Oprah's favorite flavor booster makes for a deeply earthy, sophisticated snack. And the ingredients are 1 teaspoon of truffle oil, 2 tablespoons of chopped parsley, and 2 tablespoons of grated Parmesan. And our final adorned popcorn is furikake. The sesame and seaweed-based Japanese seasoning infuses kernels with umami goodness. Combine 2 teaspoons of toasted sesame oil, 3 tablespoons of furikake, and 2 teaspoons of lime zest, and mix that with your popcorn. Let's close out this installment with some items from the O list, a few things we think are just great for Valentine's Day. And on the very first page, floating against this white background, we have 3 pairs of glasses that have taken their sunglasses and they've taken cat eyes to a new level because each lens has sort of a heart-shaped cat eye. I only have eyes for you. Cat eye frames meet Lolita hearts in these flirty throwback shades. Attach them to lovely 14-karat gold-plated links or unchain your hearts to make a necklace. Now, these are rimless on the bottom but have kind of a heavy acrylic top to them. So the heart shapes and the side pieces are in the acrylic. The top pair are red see-through acrylic. The next one are that kind of tortoise shell. And then the bottom pair is black. Draper James June sunglasses, originally $105 each. Now 20% off with code Oprah, iconic.com. And that's EYECONIC. Gold mini heart eyewear chain, originally $50, now 20% off with code Oprah at TULESTE.com. And so that gold chain is like little miniature hearts with the point of the heart connected to the heart shape at the top of the next one. So you get this sort of cascade of little heart shapes. From flowerbox.com, and that's no O in box, at $55 each, we have room sprays, and the fragrances shown here are peony and tuberose. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.